This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Good morning, loved ones. Good morning. I am so happy to see that we have so many teens here that they had to pull up a second table. That makes me super happy. Yay for the teens. Our youth director, Kelsey, and her faithful assistant, Sarah Cannon, are over there. And they brought the entire youth group here this morning. So that mic is a little loud on the gain. I don't know if somebody's still back there, but I feel it wanting to pierce our souls with that screechy. Do you feel that? Like a little, it's a little edgy. Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. The excitement around this topic is really amazing to me. I'm super, super happy that you are all so interested in this epidemic and this horrible situation that we have going on, particularly here in Austin. I do know that we have had some articles come lately that have been helpful. I'm sure that you have read them. So I don't want to repeat a lot of things that you've heard. My goal really is to clarify some of the myths, to give you accurate information. And I do want to say that this is an odd topic for a church. And so when I brought it up, particularly to my mom, she was like, "You're doing what?" But the truth is, you're my flock. And anything that any person that is in my flock, I care deeply for. And so I want you as my flock to be prepared to approach this topic, answer questions around this topic, and be good disciples and advocates and loving first responders. So how about that? That's where it fits. So I'm going to give you an overview, some information on Narcan and fentanyl, and I will teach you how to spot an overdose and treat it with Narcan. Okay? This matters, and some of the content will be upsetting, but it's also appropriate for both of our age groups, so I want you to know in advance that I took great care with that. So if you're feeling nervous, you can set that aside. I got it. I want you to know that opioid overdose deaths across the U.S. more than doubled among teens in just 2 years. Folks from 18 to 24 are seriously at risk of opioid overdose, not because of pain that they're having or a back surgery or something that caused them to take opioids for pain and then get addicted to it. The problem is really that fentanyl has infiltrated recreational drugs, and it doesn't take but one dose for someone to have an accidental overdose. So this is not a situation where we can say, "Oh, my teen doesn't use drugs," because they don't. That is true. And if they make a wrong decision on a bad day, that is enough. So that's why it matters to us. And that is the scary part. Okay, so there it is. Because of all of these risks, I want to introduce you to Narcan, which you have two of on your table. Narcan is an opioid antagonist. So what it does is you have all these opioid receptors in your body. And when you deliver Narcan into your system, it binds all of those receptors so that the opioid cannot. And it is as safe as water. You cannot do anything wrong by giving it to someone, even if they're not experiencing an overdose. And that is the most important part. Okay. So it's an opioid antagonist, and it works not only on fentanyl, but on other opioids as well. Narcan has been so successful and so helpful that in California, they have bills introduced already to put that all schools should have two boxes of Narcan at every single campus. They're also trying to pass a law where requiring managers of bars, gas stations, public libraries, and hotels in counties with high overdose rates to post a naloxone kit with instructions in an area that's accessible to all employees. That's huge. There's a lot coming out of Yale Medical School, and one of their professors there has said that there is no downside to getting naloxone in schools if people can access it and use it in an easy, low barrier, and shame-free way. And that's a lot of why we're here. She also says it's a magical medication that literally has a Lazarus effect and can reverse the opioid effect on people's brains and give people time to get emergency care. There's no way people can misuse it or abuse it. Okay. Drug overdose deaths exceeded 100,000 for the first time in 2020, and they've continued to rise since then, with synthetic opioids like fentanyl responsible for more than 80% of opioid-related overdoses. So that is a huge deal. And if you feel your hackles rise when people talk about Narcan or fentanyl, I just want to address that that usually comes from all sorts of assumptions that are made in our media or all sorts of wrong assessments we've made about this drug and its uses. It is a scary unknown topic. And because we broach the topic with so much fear, it is very natural for us to get a little defensive or freaked out when we hear about it or enter into the conversation. So if you're feeling that way, that is welcome and it's okay. The statistic of 80% of opioid-related overdoses is the part I'm deeply uncomfortable with, particularly given that many of those deaths are among our brightest and our youngest people. So what is fentanyl? That's a question we really need to understand. I am tired of this owl looking at my back, so I'm going to come back over here. Fentanyl is the leading substance involved in overdose deaths among teens. We've already covered that. Overdose has more than doubled from 2019 to 2021, with fentanyl accounting for 3/4 of those deaths. Fentanyl is synthetic. It's man-made. It's not naturally occurring. It is 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. It is 50 times more potent than heroin. And this is what's creating the problem. A very small amount of it can make a very big difference. Prescription fentanyl has an incredible safety record. The fentanyl that you will get in the hospital, get during surgery, get in response to a trauma is a completely different animal, and it has a really great track record. So I don't want you to be afraid of that if it's given to you somewhere. The issue occurs in street drugs that are produced for recreational sale. Because fentanyl is so potent, tiny changes in the amounts mean huge changes in the potency of the pill, of any pill. So it's added usually into Xanax, into Adderall, into fake Oxy because it's cheap and it makes the pill stronger so that it is, so that someone creating those synthetic fake drugs can get it up to the level of potency that is, that would make someone a repeat customer. But I don't know very many drug producers that have a degree in chemistry or have an advanced level of understanding of the potency of that fentanyl. Okay, so that's really what's happening. Because minimal amounts make small mistakes, make huge changes in what you buy or borrow from a friend, like Oxy or Xanax or Adderall, Percocet 30 apparently is a thing that's very popular here in Austin. They call it Perc 30. Fentanyl comes in many forms. It comes in as eye drops, as nasal spray, powder, or pills. Many are made to look like other prescription opioids. And fakes are common because fentanyl is cheap and potent, so a little bit goes a long way. In street drugs, there are no purification standards. That's pretty obvious, right? But there's also no cleaning policies in places where those drugs are manufactured for sale. So there can be residue from fentanyl left on a table that is then included in the next thing that is made. So it can be an unintentional situation. So why are so many people dying? The widespread use of fentanyl to bump up the potency in drug supplies means that you never know what you're getting when you buy something. Now, I want to be clear that drugs that come from a pharmacy are still very, very safe. And what you take in the hospital has a great track record. There's been no problem with that. The issue is in drugs that are created for sale on the street. Destruction of the opium supplies in Mexico and Afghanistan in recent years from all of those cartels and all of that drug traffic that's in Mexico, that all of those opium stores were destroyed. And so the suppliers here in the US had to find other things to use besides heroin. So that's why fentanyl has become so prevalent in our area. The crackdown on doctors prescribing opioids means that people who've been dependent on them for years have had to find other sources. And so they've turned to people selling them on the streets. Teens and young adults have a lower tolerance than adults do. So they are much more susceptible than we are. They haven't had situations where they've had a bum knee or broken a foot or used opioids in the past. So that being introduced into their system with their fresh, young receptors means that they are much more sensitive to those drugs than we are. But also, they don't have old Oxy laying around or Xanax that's prescribed to them for flights, right? If they want to try an Adderall and they don't have ADHD, they can probably find some from a friend. And hopefully, if they decide to do that and it's a hard finals week, then it's something that came from a pharmacy, but you don't know that. You don't know that until you take it, right? And a very small amount of fentanyl can be a really big issue. It's become more common that kids who have never tried any of these drugs try them in a weak moment and become very ill very quickly. I think that many of us have known a kid or known a person who has accidentally died and they haven't figured out what it is and they just generally say overdose. But I'll tell you that now when someone overdoses from fentanyl, they just automatically label it accidental overdose because that's how safe the actual prescription drug is. Versus, oh, I meant to take something else and I accidentally got fentanyl included in there. So how do we treat accidental overdose? How do we spot it? The majority of the information that you need is on the boxes that I left on your tables. With Narcan or naloxone, it's really simple how we treat an overdose. It binds to and blocks the opioid receptors, which we talked about, and it restores breathing immediately. What happens in an overdose with an opioid is that it hits the part of the brain center that allows you to breathe, that tells your body to keep breathing, and your breathing slows down to such a low level that you actually die of being deprived of oxygen. So there is another newer response that they're creating that are canned oxygen, and they're going to try to use those instead of naloxone because it will be cheaper and it will have less baggage surrounding it. People may be more willing to use it, but we're a little ways away from that. So the reason we had this now is because I want you to touch the fentanyl and look at it. I mean, not the fentanyl. Good grief. That's a whole different talk. We're not doing that. I want you to touch the Narcan. I want you to look at it and experience it and see how helpful the box is and how much you can get from just understanding what it is until we can get better solutions out there, right? It's powerful. It's harmless. It's immediate. If you've used it, they tell you it is so good that when you give it, you might want to step back a little bit because that person's going to wake up really confused about what's happened to their life. As you can imagine, Lazarus was when he was raised. Lord have mercy. So Really, Yale Medical says, the alternative to naloxone outside of a medical setting, if someone is having an overdose, is death. It is that clear. There's an overdose, give the Narcan. The key to this solution is accessibility, though. And so that means carrying it in your backpack. It means the proximity to this drug is really critical to the survival of the person. Getting in that window of survival really matters. So we have to present it in a way where there is no shame about people carrying it, where it is on every floor of every dorm, so you don't have to take the elevator to the bottom to find the one person that knows where it is and then get it all the way back up to someone who accidentally took an Adderall during finals, right? It means having it at every single school. It means having it in your car, putting it in your kids' backpacks, and teaching them how to spot an overdose. And then teaching them that it is so safe that you can give it even if you're wrong about what you see. It's okay to still give it. Just like a fire extinguisher, you hope you never need it. But in the moment that you need it, you really hope that it's really close by. It's that very same situation. I also want you to know that test strips are available. They were considered drug paraphernalia in the state of Texas, which is so ridiculous, but that's been corrected. So now test strips are, you can just carry them and have them. I don't have them yet. Once I do, I'll make them available to y'all, but test strips are available. So you can supply those to your kids who are at college also. Fentanyl. So if you decide that you're going to buy a little bottle of Adderall to get you through finals, you can test that Adderall to see if there is any fentanyl present in the dose that you have. Now that's dicey, right? That's dicey. I'm not sure as a parent I want to go that far. But I will say to you teens there in the back that test strips are available. And if you're ever going to try something that has not been prescribed to you, you can test it with a test strip. That's what I'm saying about that. It's like the condom conversation, only worse. Am I right? Like, do you give them? Do you not give them? Are you giving permission? What's happening? So there are a lot of barriers to this, as you can hear just in the last 1.5 minutes of me speaking. There's a lot of misconception. There's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of fear about having Narcan and test strips available. And so what I need for you to do is encourage more and more people to carry this specifically. And I want you to know that the studies around, there have been studies done around having Narcan and whether or not it gives kids permission to try things they wouldn't try because there's a solution. There have been many, many studies done already, and I'm happy to provide them for you. But what they tell us is that is starkly untrue, because when you educate someone about the use of Narcan, you're also educating them about the potential contamination of fentanyl and whatever they're planning to take. And that information, that education, is where we have power. So you have to know your chemistry to handle such a potent drug safely. Small mistakes. That's a wrong page. I'm like, we already covered this. Another barrier that we have with our kids, y'all, and I'm going to be honest, is that we have scared them so many times into not taking things that now they don't listen to us. When we say, no, this is actually life-threatening, instantaneously life-threatening, they're like, yeah, yeah, you said that about pot. Yeah, yeah, you said that about whatever else. We've cried wolf one too many times, and they're like, la, 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 la. I get that. I mean, we went through the same thing when we were teenagers, did we not? I mean, we had Barbara Bush, right? Yeah. Woo! We had Nancy Reagan. Some of us had Nancy Reagan, some of us had Barbara Bush, but it's the same in every generation, right? It is like, that is, we have said so many times, this will kill you, but I'm really saying to you that this will kill you. I really mean it. And that's a barrier to the education we have with our kids. There's also assumption and denial on our part as parents to think that our kids would never use heroin, therefore they are not at risk of this. So what I need you parents to know is that our kids are in crisis in terms of their mental health, all of them. They've suffered in the last years and they're struggling socially and academically to catch up from what they missed during the pandemic shutdown. You already know this. This makes them fragile and it makes them vulnerable to a lot of things that they wouldn't normally be vulnerable to. And what I need for you teens to understand is that in this moment, fentanyl is very, very common. It's cheap, it's potent, and it's the in most of the street drugs that you can buy. Please do not take anything that wasn't directly from a regulated pharmacy. And if you do use a test strip, please make sure that all of your peeps have Narcan available and be together. The worst thing that you can do is take something on your own in the privacy of somewhere by yourself, and then you have no one to help you if there was an accident. So keep it nearby, keep it in your car and backpack. Please know that you won't do anyone harm if you use it. And I'll tell you that when you call 911 for support and you say, my friend took something and I don't know what happened, she's just snoring and I can't wake her up, they'll say, do you have any Narcan available? That's the first question they ask now. So it's everywhere. So I want you now to open those boxes that you have. And I want you to read the instructions together at your table. And then we'll talk about whether or not you have any questions about it. Open them. And you're going to take them home. So open them. And if there's not enough for everyone, we have some more at the front desk. We keep it in a little free library down at Trinity Center. It's everywhere. No, because Mona's got the rest of them too. Okay, so give you these and these. Let me. Yes. Plenty. Did y'all get these yet? This is what the test strips look like. This is what the test strips look like. Yes, ma'am. I don't know. Okay. We'll talk about that. Thank you for remind me if I don't say that. You got those? These are, that's what the test strip looks like. Yes. Okay. So I've had a few questions. I'm still on. Okay, I've had a few questions. One is, where can I get more of this? The easy answer for today is at the front desk, because we still have more up there. We are supplied by the county, and we now get, I think, 160 boxes of these a month, because we have been giving them out. And because we have that little free library in the Trinity Center, they're very happy with our response and the fact that we are easily and lovingly distributing them. So they will keep us in supply. So if there's not enough for you at your table and you want to take one home, there are more at the front desk so you can grab one on your way out. However, you can now buy them at a pharmacy. The pharmacist can write you a prescription and then sell you the box until the fall, when they become available to everyone without that little step in the middle. Okay. So you can get them everywhere. They cost. They're free here. Yes. It's not expensive. It's like 20 or 30, 40, 50, 20 or 30. It's worth having. I also gave you this picture of the fentanyl test strip so you can understand what that looks like. I have been told that Sarah just read in the paper this morning that that is still in committee, so they may still be considered drug paraphernalia. Okay. So it's probably on the way, I'm going to say, but maybe in the fall. So right now, keep your test strips hidden. Yes. Fentanyl? Yes. Thank you for saying that. That is one of the common misconceptions about fentanyl, because in the past we have had so much drug struggle with Mexico. This epidemic is still being blamed on the border. And I want you to know that the numbers on the border have decreased so substantially that it is very clear it's not coming across the border. It is being manufactured here in the US. What we see on the border, because there's been so much education of this, that the deaths have decreased by a huge amount. And I have statistics. Our own Jane Maxwell, who is used to be a parishioner here, is now in North Carolina working with the FDA on a committee that works on this very situation. So she advised me. And then she also got me in touch with Charles Thibodeau, who works here in Austin, and is now a good friend. So that's really amazing. I also talked to a bunch of EMTs and first responders who work with this stuff to get you accurate information. So I want you to know, there's a couple of things that I want you to know about this from a practical standpoint, that keeping it in your car is going to, there'll be some evaporation because of our Texas heat, but you'll still have 90% of a dose, even with that loss. So it's still worth it to have the police officers have said, the amount of times they've taken it out and then forgotten to put it back in their patrol car when they go to work has been enough to convince them to just leave it in the car and go with a 90% loss, particularly since these boxes have two doses. Right, it doesn't change what's in there. It's just that some of it will be lost. Also, it has been successfully used up to 5 years past its expiration date. So if your box is expired, don't worry about it. It's still better than not having any. Question? Yes. Fire station? You could also bring it, because you're connected here, you could also bring it to us and we'll return it to the county. We did have the syringes here until I came. And then Emily and Liliana and I switched us over to the nasal because it's so much faster and so much easier. And I had asked one of our people that works at the front desk, are you willing to learn about this and learn how to give a syringe dose? And she was like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. So that told me what I needed to know, really. Question.
Receptors.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you for asking that. So when you give a dose, you'll notice on the box, it said you can give up to 16 doses. What did it say? It doesn't. That's keep giving it every 2 to 3 minutes until help arrives. So my suggestion is this, teens, give a dose, call 911. That gives you a moment to step away in case your person gets super freaked out that they're alive. Or we're dead, whichever is happening. Give a dose, step away, call 911, and then come back and give another dose if you need to. And then hopefully help will arrive. It is going to wear off. It is going to wear off faster than the opioid has left the system. That's a half-life problem. We can talk about that if you want to know the semantics. But what they're going to do when they get someone in an ambulance or help becomes present is they're going to give oxygen and they're going to continue to give this until they can get the opioid out of their system. Yes. Oh, I don't know. I will find out. I will ask. Yes.
So, tell your kids. Find out about this. I'll just take my shoes.
Oh.
And you got to tell them that.
Yeah.
You're still there.
Later. Still be a problem. You have a question, comment? Sunday school class is, a teen, what age group?
13. It's been a long time since I've been here.
There they are. Ta-da! And the sheep has returned to his flock. Other questions? Yes, I love comments.
A lot of debate about, well, if it's here, if it's in the school, then kids are going to use it. And the person giving us the training used the EpiPen. They're like, just an EpiPen on campus doesn't mean kids are going to go eat peanut butter. So it's using that, it kind of like. Oh,
yeah. Yes, that's super helpful. That's super helpful. Really. Yes.
Reduction is a bit of a buzzword, but I just want to say controversial when it first came out.
Oh, yeah.
So
I think we all saw an uncle that doesn't wear a seatbelt, don't we? I mean, thank you for saying that. Speaking of harm reduction, the information that I put on your table is from our harm reduction group here in Austin. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I have some, like flyers for in coffee shops and stuff. On this need to stay safe flyer, it says overdose prevention hotline. This is a hotline that people can call so that they do not use alone, because that's the most dangerous thing. And they're non-judgmental. They will sit with you. And then if you become non-responsive, they will call EMS. So not as great as Narcan for the record, but it's still reducing harm. And I think a really, really cool resource that is non-judgmental and compassionate and caring, which I think is pretty crucial. Kevin, you have a question, friend?
So I
immediate
dopamine effect of using fentanyl other than
that's the main one. That's it in a nutshell. It's the breathing part that's.
Marijuana
can have fentanyl in it. And just so we have a visual in our heads of the lethal dose of fentanyl, it's about 4 grains of sand. So. Yes. So there have also been some misconceptions. There have been some stories that are not accurate. Like if you touch it, a police officer opened a package and died. Those are things that are blown out of proportion. It is not that lethal, but it is 4 grains of sand lethal. So it can be found in marijuana.
And touching.
The harm is in ingesting it. That is correct. Pinpoint pupils are what you'll see with an opioid overdose. You will see blue lips. You will see someone unconscious. If you have taken first aid training, you know that they tell you if you see someone that's like 50, 60 and unresponsive, it's probably a heart thing. But if you see someone that's 15, 25, 30, you can assume it's not the heart. It's something else. And so it is asphyxiation. There is something stuck in their throat. They have choked on something. But the difference between spotting an opioid overdose is you will often also see foaming or you will hear snoring. And that is not because they're so passed out that they're now snoring. So if you're doing something with a friend and they go to sleep and start snoring and you're like, I'm out of here. This is no more fun. I want you to know that snoring is the sound of an overdose. It is the person laboring to breathe, and that is the that's really the telltale sign. But if you see anyone that's unresponsive, that has pinpoint pupils, blue lips, foaming at the mouth, give a dose. Call 911, give another dose, and then look for more Narcan or for the ambulance to arrive. And it can really be in anything that we pick up on the street. It can be in a friend's Adderall. That is a really common thing, parents, for kids to really be struggling to get their finals done and then get some help from a friend who's prescribed it. And the problem is really that we just don't know where it came from, that pill that we take. So yes. Yeah. And Oh, yeah. That is not what Judge Argelo is saying. That's not what she said. It is. It's also in eye drops, right? Eye drops, nasal spray, powder, pills, pot. And it's most of it, some of it is made to look like other pills. And, you know, we've heard stories of it being made to look like Skittles or things like that. I do think that sometimes we make recreational drugs look more fun. If you've ever had or seen a recreational Xanax, sometimes they look more fun that way, but I don't really think they're going to show up in your Skittles pack. I think that's more like a razor blade in your Halloween candy situation, right? I mean, it's, but I do want you to be aware that it is in all sorts of formats and it is a very small amount that creates a very big problem. There was one other thing I was going to tell you. I forgot what it was. Please reach out to me, y'all. My email address is on the website. It's kristen.b. And I'll answer any questions you have. I have so much data from Jane, who was incredibly helpful. And I have connections here in Austin for us to do more training or get more information, whatever you think you might need in your community. If you're a teacher, if you need help talking to your workplace, or you need some change and help somewhere, please reach out to me. I'm happy to do that. Okay. Not that I'm aware of. No, you can just give it freely. And I'll tell you, as you can, as evidence today in like the largest class we've had in a really long time, people are more interested in this than you think they are, because we've read it and we're terrified. It's terrifying that it's out there. And we have kids and we love them. And Ella, I really want you to live. So answer your question. This is my daughter, Ella. Awkward. Sorry. No, you cannot get in trouble for having Narcan. That is a very good question. Thank you for asking it. If you get in trouble, send that person to me. This kid changed the dress code in Round Rock ISD. Thank you, Ella. Please don't look at me. Yes.
I'm a college kid. What I'm hearing and having pretty open conversations, the two things that really stand out to me where I feel like we need more conversation and clearer information, this myth about it can't be in pot, it can't be in a joint, it's not a marijuana issue, is they simply do not believe. There is misinformation. They believe that marijuana is not a risk, not a problem. How do we... Yeah, it's like a rhetorical question, but how, and these are like really smart kids, but this group of friends sees this as a fentanyl myth, that marijuana is not an issue. So that is the basic like recurring conversation. Marijuana is not a problem. It's not possible. But it is. So that's a concern. And then the test strips, like, I'm very conflicted about the
yeah.
test strips, because I definitely recognize, like, their role in harm reduction. If they're considered paraphernalia, that's a concern to me, because my co-parent
right.
gave those to my child, and I put them on a college campus where he could get into trouble for having drug paraphernalia at this point. But my bigger concern is, how do we balance, this is a potential tool, if you're absolutely going to use, this is a potential tool, but I'm wondering what the data is on the efficacy. Like, is this 100%? And how do you use the strip correctly to make it 100%?
Right.
And does it work on marijuana? Right. Is what there was.
So I'll tell you a couple of things that are sort of dicey. The first, I think, from an educational informational standpoint, is really that there can be contamination on surfaces from someone who is selling drugs. And that is likely how it's getting into marijuana, not someone putting it intentionally there, because it doesn't do anything for the efficacy of marijuana, really. It is more dangerous than would be helpful. But the other thing I think is that, and this is the dicey part, so I'm going to speak carefully. In earlier generations of people, myself and people older than me, there was a custom of drug use where you always used with the person who was selling with you. And that's how you made sure of the effectiveness and the safety of what you were purchasing. And that is no longer a thing. So I don't know how close you are to these conversations with your youth, but I would say that in every area of the way that we socialize now, people are incredibly isolated. So what we get is like third place or fourth place. It's been passed on by somebody we knew that got it from somebody they knew. It's no longer the case that we have like, I'm a pot guy, right? Which is what older generations have. Y'all don't have that. And so it may be that that is the suggestion, but I think the education of it is not that someone's trying to harm you. And I do think pot is probably statistically safer, but it is 4 grains of sand. It is a contaminant on surfaces by people who aren't regulated. And so that's really the concern. And I don't know that test strips work, because I think that you have to, I don't know enough about test strips.
So I just want to share that, you know, got 24 years since I've used drugs in August. And I will tell you that when I was in high school, which was seems like a long time ago, we had a problem where kids would go to parties and people would put acid or angel dust in marijuana, they put it in their sodas. And I had a very good friend of mine almost died from heroin dose because someone put it in their drug that they were using and wasn't aware of it. It's not about whether drugs are happening. It's about whether or not you can save a life. Whether or not maybe God gave us through the Holy Spirit, potentially this drug to help those, for us to be better people. And if you look at it in that way versus, am I worried about someone using this or getting permission? It's completely different. Kids are gonna do drugs. There's gonna happen. Adults do drugs. Kids do drugs, adults do drugs. This right here really is a miracle. And don't let your fear stop you from being able to save someone's life. It's just like CPR. A couple weeks ago, there was bad wreck in front of my house and I had to use CPR to save someone's life. If I didn't have that knowledge, then that person would have died before the first responder. It's the same thing. And as an actor, come talk to me about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate it. Yes. Yes.
So I think one of the educational things that I would do, I did ER in the Austin area for 35 years. And so the Narcan is awesome. The problem is there's been adulterated drugs that people take for years. And in Austin, we'll get a wave of K2 was 5 years ago or whatever, and there were people passing out in our parking lot. We had times where they were mixing atropine and two or three other antihistamines together and letting people shoot it up because it was a cheap way to do it. Uh-huh. That's going to happen. And so the educational point, whether it's with marijuana, heroin, whatever pill seems like it's the thing to do today, is that something from the pharmacist is very different than something from the dude who got it in his rear end across the border and gave it to you.
Really? So those are very different things.
Well, that's how it's coming. And I'm taking care of people who that pops, and then you got to take care of them for 3 days in the ICU. You can take a very safe medicine, which fentanyl is. It's been used for many, many years since before I became a doctor. And you can make something unsafe when it's adulterated.
Yes.
Because you don't know what you're getting. And that's the educational point for your kids. That it's not that, oh, this drug is so bad. And they go, well, no, I had a friend. They took it. He got high.
Right.
It was fine.
Right.
It's like, well.
Yeah. Your drug dealer is not,
not your friend.
A chemist.
He's not a chemist. He's not a
It's not a complete fail safe, right? And when you have it and you have Narcan, you can do the best you can do. And then you have some training wheels on this very rickety cart that is young adulthood. And we have some guidelines. And in the talk of that and the education piece of that is where the numbers go down. Because we know the way to respond to any of this is in education. And I want to tell you that you're going to have feelings about it and concerns about it. And it's terrifying. And I'm a parent of these two girls that are 14 and 16. So I get it. And it's awful. So it's awful. Why did we have kids? God, why did we have them? It's awful. I love y'all so much. It's the hardest job I've ever had. So if you want, you know, to muddle through that together, I'm here for you. I have a question here. These are our last two. Yes, I know. So you take a small bit of the pill or, and then test that. Okay. One more question. What's another question? You, it was you, Taylor. Yes. So, Sarah has let me know that the test strips are still in committee, so they are not yet legal. So be aware of that. And, yeah, I mean, I cannot imagine at this point in the discussion, if there is no other paraphernalia present besides test strips, that, I mean, I'm not advising you to do that, and I will have them. So,
but it is
for what it's worth.
I do know firsthand that it is an issue on college campuses right now in dorm room checks.
Yes.
Because these are not allowed, so.
Okay.
It sounds like that's about to change, but as a
thank you for that. That is really helpful. Thank you. It's I know. It's in committee. Thank y'all so much for being here. Please reach out.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.